Welcome to Inside Rock. We're going to be talking about the dark side of the moon.
Nice.
Didn't we already do that in Weird and Wacky podcast?
Well, that was a different dark side of the moon.
Weird and Wacky.
This is about Pink Floyd and the dark side of the moon.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
All right. So one of the biggest selling albums of all time. Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon.
I think they're upwards of 45 million now, I think.
I'll be honest with you. I listened to it again today. You got to be strung out. You got to be high.
Not a good start.
No, not a good start.
Not a good start.
What do you mean?
Now, anybody, listen.
By the way, what Oat just said is not a representation of how Queeks and I think.
No, so that album to me is... it's like near perfection, really. And you got to remember when it came out. It came out in what, 73, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just the way it was recorded. I mean, next to the Beatles, remember they on Sgt. Pepper? Was it Sgt. Pepper or Magical Mystery Tour?
I think it was Magical Mystery Tour,
where they went with a 16-track system, first time ever done, right? And they got all creative. Mm-hmm. Next to that, Dark Side of the Moon was the most groundbreaking album of the 70s, in my opinion.
Well, it led some of the progressive rock.
Well, for sure.
In that time period. Yeah, I know. I don't know. Okay.
And it was a pretty big leap. I don't want to get too far ahead, but it was a pretty big leap at the time to do an album like this. First of all, they weren't even used to doing this kind of music.
Well, it was a concept album.
It was a concept. And they've never done it before, and we'll get to why they didn't, but... But it was at the time where I mentioned before to you when we were talking, I think it was you, glam rock was really taking off in the early 70s. And it was just a different genre of music. And
totally different.
Yeah. And they come out with this? Wow.
Yeah, that takes some courage.
Yeah. Big jump, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, let's get...
Well, let's back up a little bit.
Let's back up a bit. And I don't want to give a whole history on Pink Floyd.
No.
But let's just say that the original members did not include David Gilmour. It was Syd Barrett that was on lead guitar and vocals.
Now, he left, what, 68?
1968, that's correct.
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, he had, well, part of what happened to Syd Barrett was part of the inspiration for what Roger Waters had... For Dark Side of the Moon, all the pressure that Syd Barrett had, and the mental issues, and the drugs, and he was a mess.
I was watching a documentary on. It was David Gilmour was talking about the making of the album, and the way he put it was, Syd went crazy. That's what he said. He went crazy.
Well, yeah. Sometimes that's what it takes. Some of these great albums and performers, some of them you got to wonder about them, and they pull off like memorable stuff for sure. But you know what? You said you listened to this album, and I don't want to get off track too much, but have you ever listened to the very first album of Floyd?
No. Yes, I have. I downloaded it, but I didn't like it.
No.
I didn't like
it. It's pretty out there.
Yeah.
It reminds me of even Yes.
Well, Yes has got some wild stuff. Well, early Genesis is pretty out there, too.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, there's some bands that were... It was definitely not mainstream stuff, that's for sure.
Yeah, but I didn't enjoy the first, even two albums, dare I say, for Pink Floyd. I didn't get anything from it.
You know what? Pink Floyd, in my opinion, I started following them with David Gilmour, with Dark Side. That's it. Anything before that, you're right. I'm not a big fan. I'm really not. Mm-hmm. Should we talk about who was in the band initially?
Yeah.
So the original members were Syd Barrett, Roger Waters, Richard Wright, and Nick Mason. Nick Mason, he plays the drums, and he's the only one that only plays. He plays an instrument. He doesn't do any vocals. He doesn't play any other instrument. He just plays the drums. I thought that was kind of interesting, and he was with them the whole time.
Now, did he do any writing?
As a matter of fact, if you look at the credits on Dark Side of the Moon, they even said all of them contributed to the music and to the writing of Dark Side of the Moon. Roger Waters was the one who did all the lyrics. Wrote all the lyrics.
Well, the intro to Dark Side of the Moon, the one called Speak to Me.
Yeah.
Nick Mason is credited for the music for that one.
Yeah. Yeah, he, yeah. Right. Yeah, so he, yeah, he didn't sing at all. I think everybody else contributed to vocals in some shape or form. But, yeah, anyway.
Well, we'll get into some of that once we get into the different tracks. But
yeah.
So leading up, so Syd Barrett leaves in 1968,
mm-hmm.
and Dark Side doesn't happen until 1973.
Yeah. So, I mean, Syd Barrett, he was the creative force behind early Pink Floyd. And the band obviously had some ideas of their own. So when Syd Barrett finally left, they decided, yeah, we're going to take this in a different direction.
Hmm.
Which is, and getting, I mean, recruiting Gilmour is the best thing they did, right? New guitarist and new vocalist. And I think that was the best thing they did.
Yeah, they did some of their recording at Abbey Road Studios in London, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, in 72 and 73.
Chai, you say you listen to this album when you go to bed sometimes.
Yeah, this is one of my headphones in bed album. The other one's is Brother in Arms, but Dark Side of the Moon is definitely.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Mm-hmm. Brothers in Arms?
No.
Oh, listening to it, going to bed.
Yeah. Except for when the time.
Or the scream? Or the clocks?
The clocks.
Time to get up.
Oh. Ruins the whole mojo for the whole bed headphone thing. But other than that, yeah, it's great. Yeah.
All right. Not to get off topic. The album, my choice for in-bed listening, and I've mentioned this album before, is Klaatu Hope.
Oh, yeah, you did mention that.
Oh, it's such a, you got to hear that.
See, there's a podcast right there.
What's that?
Klaatu.
Oh, Klaatu is amazing. Yeah, they get some. Yeah, we'll get
it. I thought that wasn't on the streaming services.
Probably isn't, as a matter of fact. It probably isn't, but I've got the vinyl. I'll rip it to an MP3 for you. How's that?
Okie dokie.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. So, Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah.
So what was, I already mentioned, the part of the inspiration that Roger Waters said for this album was some of the hardships and mental pressure that, you know, the industry people had to go through in putting albums together and life in general. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you listen to the lyrics, they're pretty dark.
Outside of the moon.
Yeah, but it's not an uplifting, feel-good kind of bunch of lyrics.
No, you're right, and Gilmour even said that. He said when we were making it was very dark, and even the setting that they recorded in, that was dark. Just to, so they get creative that way. They wanted it was a very dark album.
Yeah, no kidding.
The concept of it, anyway.
So, where did the album work actually start, and when?
Well, it was in 1971. They were in a rehearsal room at Decca Studios in Broadhurst Gardens, West Hampstead, London. That's where they started working on it. And the name of the project was Eclipse. That's the working title, which we know now would become Dark Side of the Moon. But it was just a little rehearsal room in London.
And he said they kept it dark and dingy just to accentuate the mood.
Yeah.
Because it was a dark,
yeah,
a dark album.
It was, and like you said, it was about just things they were going through in the industry and their troubles and their money problems, and
pressures,
everything. So, anyway, they did end up where though?
Well, from there, they ended up going to the Rolling Stones recording studio.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Rolling Stones recording studio. They a lot of people used that, the mobile studio, right? Zeppelin used it.
I never even heard of that, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, I said it was a Victorian warehouse in South London.
Yeah.
And you're right. There's quite a few that use that studio.
Yeah, there's a mobile studio. I remember we mentioned it when we were covering Deep Purple about the
record. Yeah, because they used the Stones mobile studio.
Yeah, that's right. They had to use it. They recorded some of that song in the hallway of the hotel, remember?
Yeah,
crazy. That's great. Anyway, what do we got off track here? But anyway, so then they didn't finish recording there, though, right?
No, that was in 72. They went to the Rolling Stones warehouse studio. And then they ended up later that year going to Abbey Road Studios, as you mentioned before.
Yeah.
And then more or less did 72 and 73 in Abbey Road and finished it off.
Yeah.
So, you know, the first track that was recorded?
What was it?
It was Us and Them.
Yeah, great tune.
And then 6 days later, it was Money. And actually, they said they, for sound effects, I guess they were throwing coins into the mixing bowl taken from his wife's pottery studio.
Really?
You always wonder how they get these sounds. That's like the Judas Priest song.
Breaking the Law?
No.
Which one?
Or that clanging at the beginning of the song.
Oh, yeah. That's not off British Steel, is it?
No. I think so.
Is it? We'll come back to it.
All right, but anyway, that noise.
We'll come back to it.
That noise was they were recording at the the drummer for the Beatles,
Ringo Starr.
Yeah, I guess they were recording at his place, and they were, you know, the cutlery drawer.
Yeah,
they were just banging, lifting up the cutlery drawer and letting it drop to get that sound.
I don't know what song you're talking about. I want to know what that is.
I'll find out.
I think I have every Priest album ever recorded.
Oh, I'll find out.
Go check it out.
I'll find out and let you know.
But anyway, yeah, it's funny what they go, like all these technical advancements and things they can do with mixing. And what do they use? A cutlery drawer. Like, that's crazy.
Or a pot.
Yeah, yeah. Or just dropping coins. Like, that's a really cool effect in Money. When you listen to it on a good system,
yeah,
it sounds awesome, mm-hmm. the coin effects, right? You know, part of me believes that Money was the reason a lot of people bought Dark Side of the Moon.
Oh, no question.
Right? I mean, it was no such question. A cool. It's got one of the best guitar solos by Gilmour in that. But, you know.
Well, that was one of the two promo songs they used to promote the album.
Yeah. 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 You're saying that.
Now, we should, on our playlist, we'll put Dark Side of the Moon, but we'll also put all these other songs that we're mentioning. We'll put those in the playlist, too.
So if I happen just to mention Menudo.
No, sorry.
That means we got to put it in. No.
You know what? One of these days you're going to have to. Just sneak it into a playlist.
Okay, I remember the song.
Judas Priest?
It's Judas Priest. It's Metal Gods.
Great tune.
The one with Ringo's cutlery drawer?
Yeah, they lift it up and let it go, and all, you hear all the cutlery banging, but it's a great
done to metal. A beat, right?
Yeah, it's to the beat of the song, and it's a great metal sound.
That's awesome.
It's perfect. And it's about three quarters of the way in. They don't start doing it until the...
So you'll put that song on our playlist?
It's already there.
All right, good.
You could throw a few more Priests on if you want
know.
To. Yeah, they're wicked. All right, so back to Pink Floyd. So... In 72, early 72, they started, they had a 16-date tour in the UK, and they were playing songs from Dark Side of the Moon. Now, mind you, it was included the first live performance of Eclipse, but it had now been renamed Dark Side of the Moon, A Piece for Assorted Lunatics. That was what they renamed Eclipse. So, anyway, but they're having... technical problems. They tried to perform Money live, but the performance was actually cut short because they were having technical issues, I guess.
Oh, that's
trying to perform it.
That sucks. Has anybody got any nickels or quarters?
Yeah, throw them in the pot.
Somebody's got to go back and get a shitload of dimes.
Blazing Saddles reference. Okay. Yeah. Anyway.
Slim Pickens.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so yeah, they were having, I guess they just didn't have the know-how yet how to perform those kind of songs live. So, I mean, I never saw Pink Floyd live. I had a chance to see him at Rich Stadium in Buffalo, but I didn't go. But
no?
Apparently, it's, yeah, Pink Floyd shows.
I saw Floyd.
Where?
In Toronto in the outdoor stadium.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do they have the pig? The flying pig?
I don't remember. I think they did. Yeah. Well, no, they had a screen. They had it on the screen, I think, a video screen.
Oh, okay. All right. Because they had the inflatables, right? The pig.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But anyway, yeah, I never had a chance to see him. That's too bad.
I didn't appreciate it back then.
Probably not.
No, because my girlfriend, their friends got Floyd tickets.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I was into so much other stuff. I was into Floyd too. I don't know. I just would appreciate it more now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. I can see that. Okay, so they were getting close to the official release of the album in March of 73, but what happened before that?
Well, in February, I guess it was February 27th, the press held a reception at the London Planetarium for the release of the album. But because most of the band members felt it wasn't ready because they didn't have the quadraphonic mix ready for the album, it was a pretty big deal for them to have all this stuff ready. So they boycotted the reception, and there was actually cardboard cutouts of the band. And
so they went ahead with it anyway.
They had all the press there. So the band didn't show up, except Wright showed up. But the rest of the band didn't show up.
That's just because there was free beer.
Yeah, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And they played the song with the cardboard cutouts on stage just so the press...
So they cut out the mouth, and they had people behind with the lips mouthing it.
Well, I'm not sure that happened. But
yeah, but they weren't impressed either because, like I said, it wasn't ready. In fact, they were this thing you're talking about that the press was doing, you know, they did all the work of quadraphonic sound and everything. Then this was... Promotion was done on a stereo public PA piece of crap system.
Yeah.
Like, well, you don't you put that much effort and thought into something, then someone's going to put it on a ghetto blaster. Like, you know?
Yeah, I know exactly. Well, that was defeated the whole purpose of what the concept was and the quality and the work behind the album.
Yeah.
And again, don't blame them for not showing up.
Although most people listen to music on their iPhones now.
That's garbage.
That's bad, oh, you know what else? Did you ever? I'm going off a little bit.
Yes, sir.
There's one director. He just laid into people all the work and everything that gets done in a movie, and like these assholes are watching my movie on their effing phones. He was pissed.
Was that Sidney Pollack?
I think it was. I think so.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. But it's same thing, right? Quadraphonic, all this work, and then you listen to it on your iPhone.
I can't watch a movie. Or was it Anderson? Anyway, I can't remember.
I can't watch a movie on my iPhone. That's why I've got a big screen in my back room there. And bigger the better. Nice surround sound. And
the only time I do that is, say, if you're on a long plane ride, then that's kind of a nice time, nice way to spend time watching a movie on your phone.
Different, yeah. But you know you're not going to get good quality. It's just a matter of passing time.
No. Well, that's why you watch maybe like the SpongeBob movie or something. You're not too worried about quality.
Are you kidding me? You got to be on a big screen for SpongeBob.
SpongeBob's the greatest.
Are you kidding me, man? Okay. Do you know what the working titles were for some of the songs? Breathe, the working title was Travel. And The Great Gig in the Sky, the working title was Religion. And Brain Damage, the working title was Lunatic.
Well, Brain Damage is the only time they mention Dark Side of the Moon.
Mm-hmm.
In the lyrics, right?
We'll see you on the dark side of the moon, yeah.
Well, let's go back to Great Big Gig in the Sky. There was a little bit of a controversy around that one, wasn't there, around the lyrics?
With Tori.
Yeah.
The singer.
Yeah.
Yeah, she does a great job on that. She does a really good job on that. But she decided to...
Well, she sued them later on, right?
Well, not much later.
Her name is Claire Torrey.
Claire Torrey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because she wanted credit for co-composing that song.
Right.
That's what she wanted. I guess she had a lot to do with it. But you said earlier, too, before we started recording, you said, well, we had a contract with you. We hired you to do a job. You did the job. You got what was agreed.
Yeah.
And now you're coming back and you want to sue us?
Yeah, because it did well.
Because, right?
Yeah. Anytime anybody does well, the freaking leeches come out of the woodwork.
And that's a lot of times they do that because a lot of times they will get money, even if it's just shut-up money.
Well, you get shut-up money. It probably costs less to do that than to pay a lawyer and fight it and court fees. And, you know, they know. Yeah. That's why you sue somebody that they're going to settle out of court just to save lawyer fees.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's nasty.
Hey, by the way, do you have this album, this record?
I have two of them.
You have two of them?
Wow. Wow. What's that little tidbit you told me about the original pressing?
Yeah. Yeah, and when you're looking at the engineering of the album, I mean, the main engineer was Alan Parsons from the Alan Parsons Project.
Right.
And his assistant, his name is Peter James. But on the original U.S., the very first pressing in the U.S., they got his name wrong as Peter Jones.
Well, so look on your album.
Yeah.
If it says Peter Jones, that's one of the original pressings.
That's right. If you open up the gatefold album, it'll give the credits on the inside.
Yeah.
Inside.
And I would suspect you have that.
I have that one, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, I had at one point four copies of that. Four copies. I have a 180-gram copy. which I have to have. That one's cool. I mean, the reissue, it's got a huge poster of the band that comes with it. There's a lot of extras in there.
And like you said to me, you don't get that with a download.
You don't get that with a download, baby. That's for sure.
Those 180 gram records are like a flywheel from an engine. Aren't they? they're heavy.
Well, they're like old 78s, right? That's all. Yeah. They're heavy, 180 gram. Yeah. They're great. I love them. I got a few. I don't have a lot of them. I got a few. But anyway, so there's a little tidbit about the engineering part of it. And getting back to Claire Torrey.
Yeah, what happened there?
Yeah, we mentioned that she sued Pink Floyd. She actually sued, in 2004, she sued Pink Floyd and EMI for songwriting royalties on the basis that her contribution to The Great Gig in the Sky constituted co-authorship with
Keith. That's 30 years later.
With keyboardist Richard Wright.
That's 30 years later.
Well, she won. She won. They award. So she was originally paid a standard flat fee of £30 for her studio work. That was the going rate.
Well, right? Shouldn't it stop there?
And not only that, she didn't say there were no lyrics. It was just her voice. It was wordless vocals. It was just her doing this operatic background singing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's no words either. But an out-of-court settlement was reached in her favor.
Out of court.
Although,
go away money.
Although the terms of the settlement were not disclosed. So all releases after 2005 carry an additional credit now, vocal composition by Claire Torrey for The Great Gig in the Sky. Yeah. So she's doing all right.
Well, who knows? We don't know what the settlement was.
But it was more than £30, I could tell you that much.
Yeah, it was 30 years later.
Yeah, I know. I know. You know what? That's classic. That happens all the time now, though. You're not safe ever.
I mean, especially when it's successful.
Well, if it wasn't, you never would have heard from her. Oh. Right? But anyway, she, Claire Torrey, here's a little tidbit for you. She sang a Dolly Parton song, Love is Like a Butterfly, for the opening titles of the BBC TV series Butterflies. That ran from 78 to 83, that show. So
she sued them too?
No, she probably paid accordingly, I guess.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Touched a nerve.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
All right, so we're going to talk about some of the tracks on the album?
Well, we already talked about a couple, but yeah, if you want, for sure.
Well,
we should.
Want to
share a spliff?
A what?
Spliff, you know. You never heard that term?
No.
A doobie.
A spliff?
You never heard that?
Never heard spliff.
Well, you heard if you have now.
No.
Actually, you want to Google that? Did I get that right?
I don't. I'll Google it. I don't think.
Have you ever heard that, Cha?
I didn't think it was spliff.
All right.
I could be wrong.
Cha's going to fact check that on Queeks.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty comfortable.
No, what I was going to say is that one thing about this concept album is that all the songs run into one another. There is no definite end and beginning. They just kind of blend into one another. So
money is different.
Yeah,
you know?
But it's still there's no silence in between the song. Well, there is one part.
Mm-hmm.
But it starts off with a heartbeat and ends with a heartbeat.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Right? And everything in between just kind of blends together.
Well, because it's a story. It's concept. It's a story. I love it. I think that's hard to do.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, so
what do you got on spliff?
Spliff is an old school term. Okay, that fits the crowd.
Yeah.
Originally referring to any joint where you might have to split the difference, quote unquote, between tobacco and cannabis. It can be flower or hash that is mixed with tobacco.
Thank you.
Why do you even know about that?
I have no idea. I never touch stuff.
Come on.
Never touches stuff.
Go in his top drawer. Dude, well, how come you got some lawn clippings in the front, in the top drawer?
Lawn clippings.
Lawn.
Oh, boy.
All right, getting back to the album. So it starts off with Speak to Me.
Yeah.
And credit for that one goes to, as we mentioned, Nick Mason.
Well, that's an instrumental.
Instrumental. It's only like a minute long
that
leads in. But it starts off with that heartbeat.
1 minute, 5 seconds.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And then it goes into.
It's a great lead into the album, though.
Yeah. And then it goes into Breathe.
And then Breathe is not even 3 minutes long. It's a shorter, it's like two
minutes, 49 seconds.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's Wright and Gilmore.
Yeah.
Right, and Gilmore does the vocals on that one.
And then we go into your favorite.
Yeah, this was just wacky, man.
Yeah. Run. On the run, I mean. Yeah, I mean,
there's no vocals. It's just...
It's all part of the experience of the album, man.
That's right.
All right. Whatever.
Three minutes, 45 seconds.
It's about 3 minutes too long.
And then this is the one where Cha's toes go straight out under the sheets.
Oh, dude, I know.
When he's listened to with his headphones.
Yeah,
time.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a long song.
Well, it's almost 7 minutes.
Yeah, that's a long
song. 6 minutes, 53 seconds.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then we got the lawsuit song, better known as?
Great Big Gig in the Sky.
Yeah. Did you say the Great Big Gig in the Sky?
The Great Gig in the Sky.
You said Great Big Gig in the Sky.
Great Big Gig.
That's classic. 19 minutes and 15 seconds for side one. Beautiful.
Yep. And remember, this album stays within the 45-minute envelope.
Yes, it does. Quality in mind. Absolutely. Yeah. So side two, that's where you know, a lot of people would actually start with side two.
Really?
Well, because of money, right? A lot of people buy money.
Mm. Well, I like side two the best.
Yeah.
I could do without side one.
Ew, how dude. Can you say that?
Come on, dude. Geez.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. Actually, one of my favorite songs, one of them, is Breathe on side one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Why? Well, it's not a Floyd fan, I can tell.
It's just relaxed. It's just a great tune.
Listen, we'll be in a disagreement here.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot of Floyd fans out there, so let's refrain from dissing side one.
No, I'm not dissing them.
Yeah, you did. You said it sucks.
I did not say
I heard that, Chuck.
I heard it too. Yeah.
Run the tape.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Money. One of the greatest. With Gilmore's on fire in that song. Honestly. Yeah.
That was a little more commercial, right? That song?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the one that got played on the radio a lot.
Oh, for sure it did.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it should. It was great.
Yeah. And I think you're right, Queeks. Money is the reason I think that album sold so many copies.
There's no question.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that anyway. Now, word got around. Listen, that thing didn't stay on the charts as long as it did for one song.
True.
You know? I mean, I think initially they promoted the right songs that you mentioned, Cha.
Yeah.
Right? They promoted the right ones. But that album caught on, obviously, because... Man, it's still selling.
I think it was Money and Us and Them was the two promo songs.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they're both good songs. And then it gets into kind of on the run kind of genre, Any Color You Like. It's all just kind of repetitive, instrumental, repetitive, repetitive.
Oh, jeez, dude. He's a downer.
Oh, my God. We're going to take a break. We're going to kick out of the studio.
And then there's Brain Damage. I like that one.
Let's get a cardboard cut out of him and put it in his chair.
Oh, man.
Oh, and this is the Oat theme song, Brain Damage.
There you go.
Hey, you notice I'm looking at the times of the side two. 3 minutes, 26 seconds, 3 minutes, 46, 2 minutes and 10, 3 minutes, 50. They're all short tunes.
Yeah.
Well, not Us and Them.
Money and Us and Them, the ones they promoted, the longest ones on the album, pretty much.
Us and Them's almost 8 minutes and... Money's 6.5 almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's a number of short tunes on the album.
All right. Yeah, but, and again, you listen to the lyrics to these or just, you know, if you pull it up on Spotify or whatever and you have a visual display and you can see the lyrics come up.
Mm-hmm.
The lyrics are dark, man.
That is an eye-opener for some albums or even specific songs. Lyrics.
Oh, yeah.
It is an eye-opener. And this would be one album. Yeah, if you haven't read through the lyrics to experience the whole album, you probably should.
Yeah, a lot of people just listen to this. We talked about this in other podcasts where the lyrics just take a back seat. It just becomes part of the song, the sound, but you don't really know what they're saying.
But how important is the lyrics to the
band? Well, for sure. Well, especially this album.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Especially this album. You know, let's talk. Can we talk a little bit about Dark Side of the Rainbow?
Oh, yeah. Is that the...
Uh, we have to. You can't talk about Dark Side of the Moon with that, because it was all over the internet. People were suggesting that when you start Dark Side of the Moon at the same time as the second lion roar, the MGM lion of Wizard of Oz at the beginning, it for the first 40 minutes, pretty much, it seems to be in sync. You turn the volume down on Wizard of Oz, and you play start with side one.
That'd be cool.
And yeah, I mean, when the tornado comes, right? There's On the Run, right? It seems to fit. Now, David Gilmour said there's just some guys out there that have too much time on their hands, because we did not do that, right? We didn't do that. So anyway, yeah, I mean,
so what else what else does it sync with?
Oh, wow, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff. I'm not going to get too into it, but I'm just saying it's people bought into it. They thought for sure if Pink Floyd had Wizard of Oz,
this in keeping mind, in mind that most of the people listening to it are on their fourth or fifth spliff.
There you go. But you know what? Think about this for a second.
Word of the day.
It's a lot easier now to test that theory out. But back in the 70s, holy crap, man. Were you going to get Wizard of Oz?
Let's bring the turntable into the living room.
You know
room.
What I mean? We're going to get the movie. You're going to wait for it to come on TV. Oh, wait a minute. Wait, second line work. Quick, start it. You know what I mean? Can you start renting videos?
Yeah.
It wasn't in the early 70s, that's for sure.
Well,
I don't know when.
That's a hell of a coincidence then. That's 40 minutes of pure 100% coincidence. Like,
oh, it is for sure. Like, as a matter of fact, the guys that actually did it also tested that out on a documentary of Vietnam, and it worked with that as well.
Oh, well, there you go.
So these guys are definitely stoned.
Yeah, they're definitely. Yeah. Okay. Oh, no, that didn't fit. Next movie. How many movies did they go through? 40 years later. Hey, we found one.
Hey, it works again. It works again. I'm pretty sure you could probably play side one of Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon with any movie, and you could say it works.
Especially after a few what's it called? Flips?
Spliffs.
Flips.
No, spliffs. Oh, flips, man. Whatever.
Just say Massachusetts.
Joints.
Massachusetts. I can't.
Oh, man. Oh, a very crucial correction here. Just a crucial correction. It's the third lion roar. Not the second line.
Oh, well, that could have thrown off the whole thing.
Oh, I'm just saying, right? But, yeah, just some parts of note. There's suggestions that money started to play just as Dorothy and her friends enter the wizard's chambers. It was a parable of the Nixon administration. That's what they claimed.
Whatever.
Yeah. And also, the Scarecrow. When he's singing If I Only Had a Brain, it's over brain damage. And then when he's, you know, when he's dancing all around, then he ends up falling on the ground.
Yeah.
You hear Roger Waters saying the lunatic is on the grass. Stuff like that.
Oh, that's stupid. Well, what's it, what, the Nixon administration? The what?
Yeah, the money. It was a parable. It was of the Nixon administration at the time.
Oh, the song Money.
Money.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so when it was playing, yeah, I don't know. It's just messed up.
Yeah, I don't believe any of that stuff.
Yeah, these guys are stoned. There's no doubt about it.
All right.
But anyway, put a link to that, because you can now just go on YouTube. Somebody's already done it.
Oh, that's a great idea.
They've already done it. They've synced, and you can see how it works. So put a link to that.
Okay. In the show notes.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, okay. We should mention, we don't mention enough that, you know, if people like the episode, then share it with somebody. You know, send it, share
for
it
for crying
email.
Out loud.
And if you didn't like the episode, just send it to somebody you don't like.
There you go. So, you know, we've all heard that Dark Side of the Moon stayed on the charts for a long time. Like, who's got the specifics? Chai, you got it handy there?
Yeah. Well, although it held the number one spot in the U.S. for only a week, which is kind of funny, right? The album remained in the Billboard 200 albums chart for 736 non-consecutive weeks. And that was from March 73 to July 88.
Cool.
So meaning it fell out of the top and then went back in again. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But isn't that funny, eh, for the 1 week? But yeah, it's the
It's the one of the best-selling albums of all time, and is the top 25, made the top 25 list of best-selling albums in the United States.
Wow. Well, there's no question it was successful. There's no question it was.
Well, it's, again, it's what else compared to it at that time, or even now? What time when?
Well,
what can compare to it, really?
I mean, Rolling Stone and Q have both listed Dark Side of the Moon as the best progressive rock album.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Progressive, yeah, that's true.
I mean, when I think of a progressive rock album with a story, I think of 2112.
Oh,
now mind most you, definitely. That was mostly side one, though, right? The seven episode 2112. There were seven parts to it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But the whole album.
But the concept, the album, it's very actually. That's another kind of a dark album as mm-hmm. well.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And for you non-Rush fans out there, 2112 is Rush.
And we did an episode on Rush, if you haven't heard it.
We did two, actually.
Two-parter, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we needed two parts for that power band, that's for sure. No question. So anyway, Dark Side of the Moon's won all kinds of awards. And speaking of awards, Alan Parsons, he doesn't get enough credit, you know, the engineer who went on to be the Alan Parsons Project. But Nick Mason said he was a big part of the making of that album. And Alan Parsons was actually nominated for a Grammy Award for Best Engineered Album.
Well,
he didn't win it that year, but he was nominated.
Well, the quadraphonic sound and all the progressive things they were doing, they needed an engineer who knew what they were doing.
Well, for sure. Yeah.
No, you're right. He doesn't get enough credit for that album.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
Well, plus not a lot of people were used to working with 16-track systems either in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like you said, though, Queeks, he did get a Grammy nomination.
He did. So he was recognized for it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people claim it was because of that Alan Parsons actually went on to more success. And he doesn't deny that. He says there's some truth to that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I have Alan Parsons' iRobot album.
Mm.
Oh, what a great album. It's really good. So, no, he's a great artist in his own right, for sure. So, Dark Side of the Moon is definitely on the list of best-selling studio albums of all time. And the reason I said studio albums is because if you count greatest hits albums, Eagles would be number one, their greatest hits, volume one. But if you just do studio albums with no greatest hits, Michael Jackson's Thriller is still number one with 66 million copies sold. Number two, Back in Black, 50 million copies. And coming in at number three at 45 million copies is Dark Side of the Moon.
Hmm.
And just a little bit more info, because we did do a podcast on Meatloaf, Bat Out of Hell. And that's number four with 43 million copies. And number five, Oat, your favorite band, the Eagles, Hotel California, 42 million copies. I got to mention a few more. Rumors, number six, 40 million copies. Shania Twain, Come On Over, number seven, 40 million copies. And Zeppelin IV, 37 million copies, coming in at number eight. Number nine, Michael Jackson again, Bad, 35 million. And rounding up the top 10 is Eminem, the Marshall Mathers LP. 35 million copies.
That's a lot of copies.
Yeah, no kidding. But, yeah, it's, you look at Back in Black, and they're in at number two. And
AC/DC.
And that came out 7 years later than Dark Side of the Moon, right? So they've had less time to make sales. So they're still ahead of Dark Side of the Moon, right? Which is coming in at number three.
I see what you mean.
What I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a newer album and it's got more sales. So it's actually more impressive.
Right.
Yeah. And Thriller.
Just keeps on selling.
Thriller even better because Thriller came out, 1982.
Right.
And it still is the leader. It was 66 million.
Yeah. So Dark Side of the Moon had a 9-year head start.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly.
All right, so that's Dark Side of the Moon, Pink Floyd. We got anything else there, boys?
No, anything in the news?
Well, yeah, let's take a look at the news.
Let's do it, Cha. There's no news
like Gary Ganoos.
You got to put a link. Did you ever put a link to Gary Gnu?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Everybody's going, what the hell's a Gary Gnu?
Yeah, they're still saying that right now.
It's okay. Check the link. You'll see who he is.
All right. So this week, April 12th, is that where we're at?
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, April 12th.
Yeah, 12th. Yeah, that's right.
2022. This week in rock music news.
Well, here's some news on this day, April 12th, 1968. Pink Floyd released their fourth UK single, "It Would Be So Nice," written by Richard Wright with Roger Waters' "Julia Dream" on the B-side.
There you go.
You know what else we should have mentioned? That I found out that some of the profits of the album, Dark Side of the Moon, were invested in the production of the Monty Python and the Holy Grail movie.
Great investment.
Well, wasn't that great?
I'm not dead yet.
those British guys sticking together. They were recognized a good investment.
Oh, man, I love Monty Python.
That's awesome.
They're geniuses, each one of them. There's nothing like them.
That was 75. Actually, speaking of 1975,
yes.
David Bowie, during an interview on April 12th, 1975, with Playboy magazine, announced his second career retirement, saying, "I've rocked my role. It's a boring dead end. There will be no more rock and roll records from me. The last thing I want to be is some useless fucking rock singer." Well, that was in 1975.
Yeah, he kind of went on for another 20 or 30 years.
That's right.
It's funny what you say and think when you're high.
I know, no kidding.
Who said he was high?
Well, I'm just rolling the dice here.
Okay. Yeah.
Char, you mentioned something about AC/DC in the news.
Yes. So if you're ever needing surgery, you better hope your surgeon likes AC/DC.
Why is that?
Because listening to rockers, AC/DC makes surgeons faster and more accurate. Research reveals. So in trials, those listening to Highway to Hell and TNT saw the time needed to make a precision cut drop from 236 seconds to 139 seconds.
That's a big jump.
I know. And they did around 5% better on tests of accuracy.
Really?
So not only faster, but better when they're listening to ACT-DAC.
They were thunderstruck.
Yep.
Right on.
That's interesting stuff.
It's true.
There you go. Thanks
Dirty
for that.
Deeds done dirt cheap.
Yeah. So, like, if you
are you done now, Queeks?
No, I could go on and on.
So, if you go in, you ask first thing you do before you go under, you ask your surgeon, "What kind of music do you like?" And if they say the Dixie Chicks or something, then you're fucked.
Dixie Chicks
or whatever.
Oh man. Yeah.
All right. Is that it then, boys?
Yeah, I think so. Yes.
So that's it for this episode of Inside Rock. We'll see you on the dark side of the moon with Oat,
Queeks,
and Cha,
the Jabber Guys.
Remember to go to our website, jabberguys.com, to subscribe to our podcasts, Inside Rock and Weird and Wacky World.